my legs. Hack off my arms. Lop off my limbs. Sever my head. Am I dead? Look where the stumps push out. Uncurl, unfurl. It's grotesque, unreal. Do you want to feel? Can you tell? Am I dead wood? Am I no good? Am I a dead man? I am not a red man, or a white man, or a black man, or a yellow man, or a blue man. That's not my hue, man. I am a green man. I am not dead. I'm just off my head. See what I mean, man? I'm not a mean man. I'm a clean man. I'm not obscene, man. No longer a teen man or a lean man, but I am a green man. I have been man. I have been woman. I am partly human. I am who? Man, I am not a spaceman or a placeman or a race man. I have no face, man, just a rattling in the bushes, a sighing in the branches. I am a free man. I am a tree man. You can see, man, if you're not too scared to look, man. My feet go deep, anchored in history, in the rock of ages past. My roots clutching and crumbling through the crevices, sucking up history from the long Jurassic past. My hair blows in the wind. My fingers reach up to pull the lightning down. My leaves make air for the future. My green sap pulls history from the rocks and throws it into the air, into the future. Cut off my legs. Hack off my arms, lop off my limbs, sever my head. I am not dead. I ain't no joke, man. I am your hope, man. Welcome to Burst!
Welcome to Burst indeed. This is Fireside. The fourth, coughing away in the background, is Peter John Cooper. It's the Peter John Cooper special. I'm excited. Folk, poetry, and at the moment the Houghton Quartet with a lovely number called Washington Square Park.
Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That was a bit of a stutter. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Burst and you're listening to Fireside. I should, I usually say at the start of every single episode that there may be swearing and that there may well be bad language, but it's part of poetry, so, like, don't worry about it. But I think this episode, we've been quite clean. I'm joined by Peter John Cooper, who I think I first saw you... it was down at the Miramar when I first came at Steve Biddle's poetry night on a Monday.
Yeah, I always read there. That's third Monday of the month. We've been doing that for just over a year now, so that's terrific.
I should probably mention that this is Bournemouth Internet Radio Station, so when we talk about the locality, we are talking about Bournemouth here, and Bournemouth is filled with lots of lovely hotels and quite a few decent venues, actually, for poetry.
I mean, it is extraordinary. You wouldn't expect it, but Bournemouth really is quite a centre for poetry, and I know people in lots of other towns in England who are very jealous of what we've got in Bournemouth. Bournemouth is one of the few places where you could go into a pub and actually start reciting poetry, and, you know, you won't get beer thrown over you. Well, you still might get beer thrown over you, kind of. But, pretty well every, where in other towns, open mics really are about sort of middle-aged pub bands. Here, open mics are all about poetry, and the musicians have to fight a bit to get a look in.
They do. It's fantastic. I mean, there's some great stuff going on. There's the Winchester, you've got Freeway Poets. You've got on every third Monday at the Miramar, you've got Poetry Corner. Lagan is a lovely guy called Lagan who I featured. And links to all this stuff will be on the website anyway. But there's a great initiative called Verbal Remedies.
Remedies, yeah, terrific.
I was performing in Brighton with them, actually.
Saw the pictures.
It was a fantastic night. So thanks everyone in Brighton for having us, Pasha in particular. I think we got another poem.
Okay. This is I don't usually explain my poetry because it's got to stand and fall on its own merits, but this is my tribute to one of my great heroes, a great English eccentric who died a few years ago. I was very fortunate to meet him and go to one of his extraordinary parties on his boat moored in the Bristol docks. I'm sure you've guessed who it is. It's all about Viv Stanshaw. I want to live like Viv, but I want to be alive. I want to jive and I want to drive and skive, but most of all, I want to live like Viv. On his houseboat in the docks, wearing just his purple socks, hosting parties for the smarties, playing trumpets for the strumpets, eating crumpets, like it or lump it. Going on past 10 o'clock. I want to live like Viv. But I want to be alive. I want to jive and I want to drive and skive. But most of all, I want to live like Viv.
Fantastic. You were saying earlier that you've got quite a fan base in Arizona. You're a prolific YouTuber.
I'm a great believer in social media and, having your friends around the world. It's just remarkable that you have little pockets of fans in the most extraordinary places. And you can be better known in Arizona than you are in your own hometown, you know. I think it's great. I love the world. I'm a child of the world.
When you say a child of the world, have you done much travelling?
No, I live in my mind. I live in my head, so I travel the world. I have done the the hitchhike around Europe and stuff in the past. But
how did that go?
Brilliant. It was in the days when I started doing that sort of thing, when England had just won the World Cup. So I managed to get a lot of free bed and board by the fact that I knew Bobby Charlton. I have to confess, I don't. But in Italy, if you say you're best mates with a famous footballer, it goes a long way.
I'm definitely using that in America.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you don't use Bobby Charlton.
Oh, no, not anymore.
I mean, I guess even Bex is a bit past it. Now,
I think I'll go with Benedict Cumberbatch or something like that.
Oh, excellent.
That should be a passport.
That'll do.
We've got quite a few listeners now in, well, we've got some in Istanbul. We've got listeners over in Canada. I know one of our listeners in Istanbul got tear gas to the face the other day whilst on a riot, which I didn't see reported. So the next song goes out to Lydia and all those. Well, there's been some certain news stories which taints this song in a slightly bitter taste, but I hope you take it well and enjoy it as much as I do. This is Jill Scott-Heron with The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lifes of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Arm, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Jill Scott-Heron there with The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And we had a bit of a political conversation during that time about revolutions. Unfortunately, it wasn't incredibly optimistic. Shall we have another poem?
Yeah, actually, can I change the running order?
Yeah, of course
here?
You can.
We've got... I'm going to do my little political thing here.
I think that would be an appropriate point.
It's called To the Man in the Pink Striped Shirt and the Gold Cufflinks. And, you know, goes on a bit. You do not know me, but you say you do. I have read your pieces in the Daily Mail. You mention me quite often. I can't imagine where our paths have crossed. You move in such a different world. I read about you and my heart goes out. You must have suffered so much pain, product of a loveless home, I guess. When parents separate, it puts such stigmas on the child. Nobody but the au pair to take you to the park. No mother to read you bedtime stories. Sent away to school at 8. You never get away from such rejection. No doubt bullied, kicked by bigger boys, my heart begins to break. Following them like a little lamb, doing as they charge, believing what they say. And when the family trust bought you a place at Cambridge, nothing to do but sit alone at night until the Tory drinking club embraced your cold heart bonhomie. No, it wouldn't be in Cambridge. You wouldn't have visited our estate. I'm sure I would remember such a solitary man. Perhaps you saw my outstretched hand offering you friendship from the pavement edge, but you shied away, thinking I must be after your wallet. You were revolted to think of those like me. Down the club on Friday night, all bonhomie and all of us together, we were consoling ourselves, made redundant by a text just the day before. We were saying that we must not lose touch because some friendships are forever. We missed your passing shadow. I kicked myself. We could have helped. Perhaps you saw the tin we rattled, not for us. We were collecting for the homeless and the local food bank whilst we still had a quid or two. Now, we are the work-shy, the feckless, the scroungers that you write about so engagingly. We want nothing from the state except for handouts. Forget the taxes we have paid along the way, the charities we have helped, the effort we have put in making Britain great. You only saw us whining and mewling from our filthy sink estate. If only we had helped you. Your jealousy would have found no heft. Perhaps you would not now be resting your gold cufflinks on your desk, composing diatribes against the like of us, readying your solution to our problems. Perhaps. Let me see, a single file of us? A never-ending column along the pier at Bournemouth, tied in sacks and drowned like so many mewling kittens? The lines seem never-ending, but you're sure the job can be accomplished. And when it's done, when Britain is cleansed of our sickening presence, what then? In the echoing emptiness, what will you find to write about? Better take another skiing holiday with the wife and kids. Get away from the stench of decomposing bodies on the beach. There's no one now to clear them up. Oh, I forgot. You no longer have a wife. The kids, somewhere in Buckinghamshire at another private school, another broken home from generations onwards, more childhoods like your own. Dear God! And then, irony, another broken bone, airlifted to the echoing place you have to call a home. Be careful. when the insurance fails and you are left twisted and limping, unable to fulfill your daily quota of bile, and told by text that you are now surplus to requirements, abandoned by those drinking chums who never were your friends. Undo those gold cufflinks, place them on the shelf above the basin, roll up those pink striped sleeves and snickersnee, apply the razor. And again, watch the jolly swirls of red go gurgling down the drain. Oh, I blame myself. We should have done much more to help. We should have read your haters' cries of pain. The little mewling sounds a dying fellow makes who only needed friends.
Thanks so much for that, Peter. I think I'm going to also mess up my running order as well because of that, because it strikes me that this resurgent, it strikes me of a pre-1914 mentality that seems to be coming back right on cue 100 years later. So here's a song of that time. Well, the words are by A.E. Housman, and the composer was George Butterworth. And this is performed by Roderick Williams and Ian Burnside. The lads in their hundreds.
The lads in their hundreds to Ludlow come in for the fair. There's men from the barn and the forge and the mill and the fold. The lads for the girls and the lads for the liquor are there. And there with the rest are the lads that will never be old. There's chaps from the town and the field and the till and the cart, and many to counter the stalwart and many the brave, and many the handsome of face and the handsome of heart, and few that will carry their load. So their truth to the grave. I wish one could know them, I wish there were tokens to tell the fortunate fellows that now you can never discern. And then one could talk with them friendly and wish them farewell and watch them depart on the way that they will not return. But now you may stare as you like, and there's nothing to scan, and brushing your elbow unguessed at and not to be told, they carry back bright to the coiner the mintage of man. The lads that will die in their glory and never be old.
So Peter and I have just been discussing that we should probably lift it with some degree of optimism, perhaps, or maybe something stranger. Peter, you've got a sci-fi ebook coming out, haven't you?
Yes, I have. Well, it just came online with Kindle last week. It will take a little longer before it comes out on Smashwords and other media, but... contained within the science fiction short stories, proper short stories, I say, proper science fiction, you know, with robots and people in silver suits and alien spaceships. Peppered in among the short stories, I've got some of my poetry as well.
And this book's called Fear of the Future.
Fear of the Future, which is kind of because one of the stories is about Wing Commander Fear, whose job it is to eliminate terrorist cells with his drones from his bath where he controls them. So
I can tell there's absolutely no satire involved in that one at all.
Absolutely no satire involved at all. So I thought I'd do one of the poems that I've got in there. It's called Space Badgers. I've been doing this for quite a long time, but I think it's optimism, because it shows that in the future we're heading for somewhere else, an unimaginable future. That tiny spark of light, that glowing pinprick in the night, leaving us on a one-way flight of unimaginable velocity. Farewell to Earth, Venus, Jupiter and Mars, heading outward for the stars, taking all our hopes and fears on a journey of 100,000 years in the vastness beyond our galaxy. The Space Badgers are emissaries to distant planets, lands and cities, if there are any out there. Of all the creatures here on Earth, the badgers fought and won their birth, strong, tenacious, single-minded, proud, savage with strangers, never cowed. Your bristled coat's proof against all ill. Now hibernate through the cosmic chill. Go softly, space badgers. Sleep long and well and sound. Our earthly kingdoms in your stripy heads. Dream inward, outward bound. We have equipped your capsule with Learn As You Sleep CDs, so that in 10,000 years they will have drenched your brains in maths and physics, economics and cultural studies to the level of a current university student, and you will be able to update any alien civilization on the latest episodes of Strictly Come Dancing. You have raised yourselves above the earthly strife and evolved into the highest form of earthly life. All hail, space badgers! See how the scars on your black and white noses are pointing to the stars. If you do not make it, is your fate any worse than being ripped to bits by truck tires on the motorway hard shoulder, or torn by dogs in pits made from sheets of galvanized, surrounded by 30 jeering red-faced men, being trampled by cows down in the rushes, or being stripped naked for shaving brushes? Go softly, space badgers. Sleep long and well and sound. Our earthly kingdoms in your stripy heads. Dream inward, outward bound. All hail, space badgers. See how the scars on your black and white noses are pointing to the stars. You may find the answers to what is beyond. You carry the questions of the whole earthly race after a brief evolution in the emptiness of space.
That's wonderful. Okay, so, I do have an apology to make, because I kept on saying Jill Scott Heron before, and that shows my age. It is Gil.
Gil.
Is it not? There we are. You see, I'm a real revolutionary me. So from above the sky, now to something very folky and below. This is John McCusker's Under One Sky with the track, the reels, Jack Seward's and Boys of the Puddle.
Thank you.
That was Under One Sky. I absolutely love that song. Okay, so, Peter, should we jump straight into another poem? Or
yeah, cool. Let's do Who Do I Want to Be Today? Mm-hmm. Who do I want to be today? I want to be milk. Blue in the jug. I want to be the smile on your mug. The electric serotonin stopping you moaning, coursing through brain. The brain of the chipmunk. Or is it the fryer frying chips, moving his lips, reciting boundless prairies of the Encyclopedia Britannica, now published in America, giving reasons for fairies and the birthplace of eels, a definitive reason for the diminution of wagon wheels. I want to be the tablecloth at the picnic at Stalin's dacha, where the Georgian Cossacks dance the night away with Margaret Thatcher. I want to be dark matter. I want to be the echo of the waves and the Tillywim caves balanced on the edge of dancing ledge. The waves so hard and flashy. I want to be the interchange of expletives at the junction between crasher and crashy. Fragments of glass twinkling in the first rays of the frosty sun amid the bloated corpses of dead badgers and hares whose courses run like the clappers and sandwich wrappers. I want to be Jean-Paul Sartre and to be Nietzsche and Flossie the Jersey cow, yellow and peachy, and the hero Dan Dare and the Mekon's cold glare and the knocking down rubble and the building up trouble and the autumn field stubble, and at the finish I want to eat spinach and parsnips and pie crust and space dust, and if I must, if the asteroid strikes, to be space dust out here among the stars, the dying fires, the distant light. The very emptiness conspires with darkness and this cloud of night that bends the very space, deflects the solar wind. I am the coffee grounds of loneliness made into thundercloud, a vacuum in a vacant place, a stillness where I'm pinned by constant, distant, unintelligible radio chatter. I am 70% of the universe. I am dark matter. I am black coffee.
Now, you're not the only poet we have on this show. I mean, it'd be lovely to have a monopoly. But Steph Moe, a friend from Bristol and an incredible poet. Basically, Peter, what happens is every week, people send him in a title for him to do a poem about. And then he sends the poem to me and we put it on air. So during this, I think you're going to like your style, actually. I think you're quite similar. During this, if you think about a title that you could give to Steph for a poem, and then afterwards I'll harvest your title from you and we'll insist that Steph does it for next time.
Okay.
Fantastic stuff. Okay, so this is Steph's newest deliverance. This is Pickles and Boris, which came from a crowdsourced title. I hope you enjoy it.
Pickles and Boris. We open in media res. Pickles slumps on a chair, tatty suit torn, parasitic purple shyness surrounding one eye, acute patch made tragic. His fur, once bright blue but dulled by whiskey and grittiness, is streaked with blood. A cigarette smokes in his paw. Boris leans against the table, one ear torn, tail broken and whiskers ripped, his pink fur made even more lurid by blood and bruises. He places his gun, handle wet from brutal pistol whippage, on the table. Pours a scotch. Downs it raggedly. The kitchen floor is strewn with bodies. Dog and Cat make grim eye contact. We flash back. Our view is blurred, Vaseline on the lens, tinted with roses. Slow motion images of a blue puppy and a pink kitten frolicking through the sugar rush woods, the city of merry-go-rounds, that old musical box theme tune playing but distorted, like a serial killer's memory of a nursery rhyme. Children laugh somewhere, their delight scratched out in charcoal. Freeze frame on puppy and kitten. We focus. Pickles, puppyishly clumsy, tail forever wagging, tumbles from his treehouse, so eager is he to place the candles on his elderly uncle's birthday cake, which Pickles baked haphazardly himself, having learned a valuable lesson about selflessness from the wise old owl. He lands, scrabbling in the bush. The cake lands on his head, disintegrates. A forlorn yelp. Boris, with the breezy confidence of the new kitten on the block, happens by. His first reaction on seeing the cake-soaked puppy whining in the bush, he laughs, of course. But after a few words from the wise old owl, he licks cake tenderly from the puppy's head and helps him bake another one in record time. Friendship is cemented, and puppy and kitten become a beloved double act. We montage it up. Pickles has a brightly coloured ball. It pops, and he is sad. Boris takes him to buy a new one. Pickles has a new toy car. It breaks, and he is sad. Boris helps to fix it. Pickles has a new skateboard. He falls off and is sad. Boris teaches him how to ride it properly. Pickles is late for a party and is sad. Boris helps him to get there on time. Pickles doesn't understand his homework and is sad. Boris helps him with it. Pickles doesn't understand his computer and is sad. Boris helps him with it. Pickles wants some fruit from a tree but is too scared to go up a ladder and is sad. Boris helps him to conquer his fear and they eat fruit together because fruit is good for you. Double lesson. Pickles has a new robot dog friend. Boris is initially resentful. Their friendship is tested. It turns out that the robot is evil and Pickles is sad. Boris helps to get rid of it. Order is restored. Pickles' mum gets run over and he is sad. Boris helps him to come to terms with the fact that death comes to us all sooner or later. Pickles falls in love with a girl puppy and is sad. Boris teaches him that bros come before hoes. Pickles builds a spaceship, but it doesn't work, and he is sad. Boris introduces him to this new thing called booze. They forget about the spaceship. Freeze frame on puppy and kitten, adorably drunk. We quickly cut between the wise old owl dying, Pickles' new girlfriend leaving, Pickles' dad getting run over, Pickles and Boris getting drunk, Pickles' treehouse burning down, the happy ladybird who runs the garden dying, the garden being sold, Pickles' uncle getting run over, the sugar rush woods being bulldozed, Pickles and Boris getting drunk, Pickles' brother getting run over, the city of merry-go-rounds getting blown up, Pickles' sister getting run over, Pickles and Boris getting drunk, Pickles getting in deep with the Yakuza. Freeze frame on puppy and kitten, now dog and cat, cornered by a crowd of sword and gun-wielding psychopaths in the pokey kitchen that they share. We cut subliminally fast through the ensuing hyper-violence. Dog and cat make grim eye contact. We focus. Pickles pours a second scotch, wincing at the pain in his joints. He slides the glass across the table. Boris takes it. Sips. It hurts his bloodied mouth. He grimaces in a satisfied way. Lights a second cigarette. Hands it to Pickles. I love you, man, says Pickles as he smokes. I love you too, says Boris, and finishes the scotch.
What did you make of that?
Wonderful. Excellent. So, excellent film inside your brain.
Bravo, Steph. Thumbs up from here. So do you have a title, do you think?
For the next poem, I think you should do one called White Lightning.
White Lightning. Steph, you have been commissioned. Would you like to enchant us with another poem?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what won't be completely overwhelmed by that piece of wonder. So I'm going to do another ghosty thing.
Lovely.
I think. Okay, so if you're easily frightened, then go and make a cup of tea at this moment. If you're not easily frightened, then you can stay and listen. He heaves himself up from the deep. The white flesh hangs in ragged strips, where it has been gnawed by wrasse, mauled by mackerel, garfish and the scad, and picked by conger, bream and bass. The white bones, where they show, where they're no longer tissue clad, are polished by the rub of sand and tide. Around his shoulders, heavy chain, 2.5 fathoms, red with rust, still padlocked to his wrists, still bonds his bones with bands of pain. Across the midnight sands he comes. He pulls himself because he must, up on the promenade where no one sees, the coloured lights from the arcade flashing soundless in the breeze. Link by link, he drags his weary load along the shuttered shop fronts of the road, the health food shop with its display of dust, the gallery with garish oils of old Harry's rocks, the chemist's estate agent's paper shop, plastered with postcards advertising pine beds and Pilates classes, carpets and cookers, electric clocks and cars and council house exchanges, stops by the church. Empty. Locked. One small lantern burning in memory of those lost at sea. He stands at last by the narrow, importuning casement where she dances. Slowly twirling in the light, her honey hair wrapped round her sun-stroked shoulders. The ragged skeleton watches through the night, or would watch, would cry a bay of tears if his eyeballs had not been sucked dry by little worms and sucking fish. At last, she turns and draws the blind. The lamp gutters out of sight. If he had ears, he'd hear her flickering footsteps on the stair and another, heavier tread behind. He wrings his bony hands as if he could still feel despair if his heart had not been pulled apart by lobster, crab and snail. One joint detaches, flesh rots, tendons fail. And on the step without a care, he leaves a little pile of bone. One finger, one alone burdened with a ring of gold. Then heaves himself back to the sea and the children who are waiting there.
Where does the gallows gutter gargle come from in your poetry, really? That's what I'm interested in, because you don't strike me as a mad axeman.
Well, no, it's amazing what we all do in our spare time, though, isn't it? Everybody needs a hobby. I mean, I'm just interested. I'm fascinated with the idea of planting things in people's heads. That's why I love radio, and I love the idea of radio, because it's a direct communication between my mouth and your head. You know, I can actually fiddle with your synapses and I love sort of gorgeous narrative things which create ideas that cannot be expressed visually. You know, so they're expressed directly in ideas, and I like just poking about in your head and seeing if I can release some sort of emotional response. So I suppose the horror bit is because that's an easy button to push with people. Most people are revolted by something, and if you can get people to respond in that way, then you're very close to an emotional rapport between you.
So what's your preferred audience? Do you prefer a more prudish, maybe older audience, more reserved, used to... because looking at the Miramar where we met, it's a hotel. It's all very lovely dining tables, and sometimes the guests come in and they're not quite sure about what this poetry thing is going on.
I think the only thing with somewhere like the Miramar is that you have a quieter audience for whom that idea of communication is a lot easier. I mean, I do read in open mics and I slams and things like that. But that I find that as I get older, I find that all a bit superficial, requires a kind of an instant hit. And I like the idea of something longer. Some of my stuff, I have written extremely long pieces. I've got one, Flexigesis, which is out there. Can be downloaded from the internet,
and I'll put links up for that as well.
Oh, that's very kind of you. but you know, that's a 40-minute piece, and I when I performed that live, you know, we actually had the audience lying on the floor with the lights out, with just my voice communicating into people's heads.
How did it go?
Oh, terrific. It really upset people. You know, no, I had someone who was so emotionally overwhelmed, they actually had to leave in the middle of it because it such a direct emotional response evoked. And that, I had a wonderful soundscape artist who worked with me called Cy Waters, who created a soundscape around my words. One day when I'm very well off, I'll do that again. So,
well, if you've enjoyed having your synapses poked around and fiddled with, that link will definitely be up on the website. So do check that out. And why not lie down in the middle of your room and pretend Peter is standing right above you and see how that helps. But
weird.
On a lighter note, because
unpleasant.
We're going to be moving into a bit of more lovey-dovey material here. So I'm gonna preface it with a Judy Collins song, just to set the butterflies out a little more after being locked up in a dungeon for the last one. We'll see you on the other side of this track. This is Michael of the Michael from Mountains. Even I'll do that again. This is no. Local radio voice.
This is Michael from Mountains by Judy Collins.
Michael wakes you up with sweets. He takes you up streets and the rain comes down. Sidewalk markets locked up tight and umbrellas bright on a grey background. There's oil on the puddles in taffeta patterns that run down the drain. In colored arrangements that Michael will change with a stick that he found. and it's dark when the clouds come by. Yellow slickers up on swings like puppets on strings hanging in the sky. They'll splash homeless suppers in wallpapered kitchens. Their mothers will scold, but Michael will hold you to keep away cold till the sidewalks are dry. Michael from mountains, go where you will go to. Know that I will know you. Someday I may know you very well. Michael leads you up the stairs. He needs you to care, and you know. Come crying to the key, and dry you will be in a towel or two. There's rain in the window and sun in the painting that smiles from the wall. You want to know all that his mountains have called, so you never do. Michael from
Isn't that nice? So, do you want to go straight into a poem after it? I'd like to actually know when you started writing.
I started writing when I was 3 years old. I've still got the first poem I ever wrote at the age of three.
How did that come about? Was that a classroom exercise or?
Three?
Oh, yes. I've gone done my maths, I have.
It was just, I remember my mum gave me an old autograph book of hers that she'd had when she was a girl, and a purple pen. I remember it very clearly, and I actually wrote out a poem in this book, which is, I say three, but I may have been four, but.
So you must have had quite a few poems read to you to know that that was a poem.
Interestingly enough, I came from a background, you know, my parents, I mean, we lived on a farm. They were not well-off people. In fact, very, very poor. But the one thing we had in those days was books. And my mum always read, and she read poetry, and she read stories, and she read novels to us, you know, she would and we had the radio, because, you know, it was those days before telly was invented, and I grew up in an environment of words and sounds, and I wallow in that, and I've kind of, over my life, I've done all sorts of other things, but you come back to that sort of pure, rich, you know, depth that you get with words and just one person reading to another, and I love that.
Well, this is what I love about this show and doing poetry gigs as well, because I often forget. I'll take a break and then I'll forget about how powerful it can be. And this is why I enjoy doing this show so much. I'm so glad you're here, because it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful feeling.
Cool, yeah.
Well, shall we demonstrate the power that poetry can maybe evoke?
Yeah, I'll try.
No pressure.
I just want to remind you about my latest book. If you look on Kindle or Smashwords, you know, there's all my work there, because I wrote a couple of couple of ghost stories about a little lad who was beaten to death in the streets of London and in the 19th century, and then he comes back in order to try and find out why he was murdered, called the Hurdy-Gurdy Boy. And you'll find that on Amazon or Smashwords, along with Fear of the Future, which is my latest collection. A little bit of advertising there, but why
absolutely
not?
Fine.
Yeah. Anyway, so here's a sort of love poem. It's as close as I get, anyway. "I think I'd better go," I said. "So many pictures in my head, picked up my bag and would have fled, except for your strange ray eyes. Strange ray eyes, strange ray eyes. You have the power to hypnotize with your strange ray eyes. You always take me by surprise with your strange ray eyes. I really ought to go," I said. "But I had another glass of red. I found my legs had turned to lead because of your strange ray eyes. Strange ray eyes, strange ray eyes. You have the power to hypnotize with your strange ray eyes. You always take me by surprise with your strange ray eyes. You said I could. And to my surprise, I found that I could win the prize. It was nothing I could analyze. Just your strange ray eyes. Strange ray eyes, strange ray eyes. You have the power to hypnotize with your strange ray eyes. You always take me by surprise with your strange ray eyes. If I was a winger, I'd be scoring tries. If I was a hooker, there'd be no need to advertise. If I was a wicket keeper, there'd be no more buys. If I was a vaulter, I'd achieve more highs. If I was just a spectator, I would eat all the pies. If I were a negotiator, there would be no compromise. If I was a politician, there'd be no more lies. If I was Douglas Bader, I would reach for the skies. All because of your strange ray eyes. Strange ray eyes. Strange ray eyes. You have the power to hypnotize with your strange ray eyes. You always take me by surprise with your strange ray eyes."
And with that, I'm going to say a massive, massive thank you. Cheers for coming in. It's been lovely having you.
It's been terrific. I've really, really enjoyed this evening.
Oh, fantastic.
And wonderful. And thank you to all my fans in Arizona and Georgia. Thanks, Ron. Okay.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Farside will be back. Oh, we realise this one hasn't been live. Okay, but we've done it as live. You've got to believe us. But it will be back next week at Thursday, 9 o'clock, and we're going to be spreading the net. We've got far more Bournemouth poets coming in. We've got people from all over the country. I've got a nicer, healthy platter for you lined up. Thanks for listening. Have a lovely, lovely day, whatever you're doing. Like us on Facebook or on Twitter to find out when the next shows are. And, yeah, love you lots. Bye.